Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us here, another episode of Dr. Homebrew. Today is all about Brian Cooper. It's not his birthday. It's not his wedding anniversary. Brian has brewed two beers, and he has given up judging duties to let everybody else judge his little tiny homebrews. His little baby homebrews. They're in 2-ounce bottles.
Taking off my judging hat here.
Yeah, and putting on your taster hat. Cooper, thanks for submitting yourself on the rack that is Dr. Homebrew.
The rack is right. The Iron Maiden, maybe more appropriately.
Yes.
Iron Maiden, excellent.
But before we dismantle thoroughly the brewer formerly known as Brian Cooper, I want to remind you guys about 5-Star Chemicals. You can go to 5starchemicals.com right now and learn the best ways to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment, your fermentation equipment, your bottles, your kegs, your carbonation stuff. All of that junk that you use to make beer with can be cleaned and sanitized thoroughly by 5-Star Chemicals. Go to 5starchemicals.com right now. Learn all about that stuff. And then while you're there, sign up for their new homebrew club program. 5starchemicals.com/homebrew-club-program. They're going to throw out discounts on PBW. They're going to let you know if they're going to be testing out new products, and you can sign up to do that before they're even on the market. Free educational sessions every month to up your homebrewing game. You got free swag, discounts, all that kind of stuff. So check them out. 5-Star Chemicals Homebrew Club program. Go sign up right now. It's really easy. All right. Cooper.
Okay.
What mess are we going to get into first?
Well, I've brewed one of your favorite styles. I know, JP.
Water?
And that is the 21C Hazy IPA that is now an official style in the BGCP guidelines. I know you love them so much.
They'll make anything a style these days. I swear to God. You want to be a style. You can be a style. You can be a style.
I won't tell you anything about it yet. I will just have you judge it as a hazy IPA.
Please. Okay. All right. And it's Brian and Harindu judging, huh?
And you, JP.
Well, I'm not really going to.
And then later in the show, we're going to get to my sour that I brewed with my buddy Eric, who's also here with us.
All right. Eric, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Well, you know what? I will say, Brian, right off the top, I popped the cap. I didn't hear a hiss. That's 20 points off right there.
I made a note on my score sheet. No hiss on opening. There's no bottle variation on that. That's in the actual fermenter.
Dab on his ass. All right, Char. Well, look, with that, you get to go first.
All right. So I can just denigrate and belittle my friend and co-host, Brian.
It's true.
Please do.
Please do. All right. Now, you were
treat him like a normal guest on Dr. Homebrew.
So with Brian, are you in a homebrew club?
Well, yes, I founded a club called the Mad Zymergist, and I'm the current vice president. And we are located in the Tri-Valley area in the Eastern Bay region of the San Francisco Bay Area, California. So anyone around this area that wants to join and learn something about brewing,
they
go
should
join
go to
Doe's.
Club Doe's.
Yeah. They're great.
Do you have
Brian, I got off the same joke
your,
at the same
your
time.
Club?
MadZymergist.com. It used to be .org, but they didn't like that as much, and .com became more was more popular from the beginning, but I just thought .org was more appropriate. And when I was running things, it was a .org, damn it. But don't go to .org because we just killed it.
Yeah. You had a real good elevator pitch there, and there was a good joke at the end, and I just want to acknowledge that. That probably everyone that comes on the show should have an elevator pitch like that ready for their club and ready to plug their pluggable for their website and competitions and everything else. So listeners, think about that.
There you go.
It's from the heart, but we do love our little club, and we've got a good group of people. We've survived the pandemic by having great people on, you know, Palmer, Zina Chef, and, you know, Pink Boots founder Terry Varendorf was on. Annie came on.
Oh, nice.
Like, I had so many awesome people on.
I haven't been on. I don't understand.
I thought we invited you.
No. Yeah. Char and I haven't been on. What's going on?
yeast people and hops people. It was just, it was fun in its own way. And I kind of miss that part of the pandemic, but I don't miss the pandemic part.
No, that's a good
lockdown
thing.
Part. Yeah.
Get your vaccine, get your boosters, people. All right. So the aroma, I loved the aroma on this beer. It was very high level of New World hops, and it's kind of juicy, quote unquote. And what I thought was interesting as it warmed up is there was a sort of a medium low level of danky that I didn't get when it was cold. And the dank kind of comes out as it warms up, which is like West Side dank. It's what we got over here.
Jesus.
So no off aromas. Like, if anyone not watching this on Facebook or YouTube is not watching JP shake his head at my old man rendering of like West Side. So aroma was good. 9 out of 12. I really enjoyed that. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Golden color. It's hazy on purpose. Low head is very persistent. So it's exactly what it should be. Flavor. Initially, the flavor is, of course, high hop flavor. And let me just have a 2 seconds of dead air while I sip it again.
Yes, please. Let's do that.
Because that's what's better for a podcast than someone listening to somebody drink. You know, it's still very high hop flavor, followed almost immediately by a very high hop bitterness. There's low malt in the background. There's certainly malt there, but it's taking second place, second fiddle, like it should be in this style. The hop flavor is kind of, my notes are citrus, but again, as it warms, I get probably equal amount of dank flavor from that. The hop flavor is very high. The balance is, of course, toward hop flavor. It's well attenuated. The bitterness doesn't really go away. So the finish is long and kind of has imbalance toward hop flavor and hop bitterness. So flavor was 12 out of 20. Mouthfeel, and I probably should have come up a couple of points on that. I'm going to come up. We're having some live homebrew judging here, people. I'm coming up to 14 on that. So it's going to affect.
Just because I'm giving you the eye right now on the Zoom call here. Yeah.
Because Cooper's like, God damn it. I made arrangements to give you stuff this weekend to take to your house. So this is how you repay me. And mouthfeel, body is medium, low carbonation. It's slightly warming. I wouldn't say it's creamy or astringent. 5 out of 5. Overall impression, I gave it a 7 for a total of 38 out of 50, which puts it in the territory of excellent. I like this IPA a lot. And I like the to me kind of comes across as a combination of New England IPA and West Coast IPA. It's got the haze. It's not sludgy. You know, it's hazy. I'll be curious if you use like oats or something like that or wheat. It's got the haze character. It's got the little bit of malt character. The malt character kind of gets overshadowed by the bitterness because it's got West Coast IPA bitterness, which I like. One of the things, I had a former coworker who was from New England, Connecticut, and he'd go back home like every couple of months. And whenever he'd come back, he'd bring like a freaking case of like Treehouse and other beers from breweries that in like, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, we'd never heard of, but that are now like really popular. And it was like before New England IPA became a thing. And some of the, like from Treehouse in particular, I recall they were a little hazy. They weren't sludgy. They were hazy, but they weren't without bitterness. They had like a firm, bitter backbone. And this reminds me of kind of some of those early 2010s Treehouse beer, sort of learning about hazy IPA. So I think that the bitterness does push this maybe a little out of style. And maybe we need to have a new category of, you know, national IPA or unity IPA or something where we have like West Coast and New England come together to, you know, be in harmony. But I think it's a great combination, but it doesn't quite fit in either category. But still an excellent for that is a good score. And thank you for sharing your beer with us.
All right. Very thank good. You. Harindu.
All right. I think Brian Sharp covered all of my points. I mean, I just opened it up, so I don't have a full score sheet, but this is a delicious beer as it is. Only issue I have is, I guess at this point, is with the style guideline itself. When it said New England IPA, it was very clear that it was New England IPA, which is maybe a better name for that would have been a juicy IPA if they didn't want to be regional, identify regions and stuff. So what Brian Schaar exactly said, I mean, I kind of feel that it is a little more classic, a little piney bitterness in the flavor. Aromatics are citrus skin, grainy. I got light level of dankness, guava and strawberry in the aroma, but not too much in the flavor. Flavor is more West Coast IPA. And then when you look at IPA guidelines, right? I mean, IPAs could be hazy. So this is...
That's true, yeah. Hop haze is allowed.
Hop haze is allowed.
Yeah,
so...
it's funny. The polyphenol haze is a hell of a lot different haze than New England IPA haze. But still... It contributes. It's part of the whole appearance. It's not the whole thing, but I
this
get what
is
you're
like
saying.
A forced permanent chill haze, basically.
So, like, I've been to Treehouse and Trillium, and you know, a lot of other breweries out there on the New England area. And then the key distinction that I learned by tasting their beers was that these are super juicy beers. They shouldn't probably even be called IPAs. They're juicy pale ales, probably. I don't know.
Yes.
The whole naming thing has to somehow fix itself.
Agreed.
and you know, they have bitterness, but bitterness is just there to support the juiciness, almost like, you know, they are so smooth and easy drinking versus the classic hop flavors that you get from American or the IPA. American IPA is more classic piney bitterness, and this one kind of skirts the border of the two, and the aroma has more juiciness than the flavor. But now I'm all confused about the name itself, and it's hazy IPA. Definitely, it's a hazy IPA. Is it supposed to be juicy? It's not juicy enough, but maybe the guideline says it's fine. So anyway, I scored it 38. So.
Nice job, guys. You guys are locked in tonight.
You know, I don't know, man. I'll echo a lot of what everyone else has said. I think it's too bitter for the style, but also the commercial examples that I have had are sort of leaning that way anyways. It's sort of what craft brewers do is just try to overbitter shit, and then someone realizes, hey, maybe we shouldn't, and then the pendulum comes back the other way to lagers, which is really
IBU,
just the natural
baby.
Place.
100 IBU.
Yeah.
No, this is not 100 IBU. I mean, this is not that bitter, but it just
I'm just being
bitter
so
than the juicy IPAs, right?
I mean, it's for me, it's pretty bitter. But again, I don't really drink these beers at all. So, you know, whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about. But it, honestly,
I think this is more than firmly, but this is a very highly
it's super.
This is West Coast IPA bitter. This is West Coast IPA bitter from the 90s, and I like it. Mm-hmm. But there, this is more bitter than an IPA has been in 10 years.
There is the fair amount of, like, you know, kind of woody character. It is very well brewed. I think it smells good. You know, when you drink it, you know it's a hazy IPA, but it is, I think, on the extreme side of hazy IPA. It's maybe like a hazy double IPA.
I'm trying to incite an IBU race among hazy IPAs now. You know, that's the next phase. It has to be. Right?
Good luck, man. These beers, in my opinion, these beers work better with lower ABV. Lower IBUs. You know, and sort of echoing what Harindu was saying, this is what I've been saying forever. It should don't call it IPA. That's what I have issue with. It's not an IPA because IPA is already style. Their guidelines are already set. Call it something else. Let's make a new thing for it. But if you call it hazy IPA, it's not that's not what it is.
Right.
Well, it's all marketing, right? If they call it IPA and then keep putting adjectives in front of it, then it sells.
Right.
There's cold IPA.
Cold IPA is a lager, but nobody wants to call it a lager. So people want to buy IPAs, so call it a cold IPA.
But it's also not a lager. I mean, it's a lagered. No. It's a colder beer. It's not really a lager. Sully made one. It's good. I've had a couple. I've had two. They've been good. I can see
it. It's like a tasty / Narzis method where you kind of ferment it, start cold and warm it up.
Right. And it uses adjuncts like the classic American beers did with, you know, use some corn or rice to lighten up the body instead of just sugars like you do in some IPAs.
Yeah.
The concept is.
I honestly think that they should have just called it Juicy Pale Ale instead of calling New England IPA or whatever. Right. I mean,
yeah. Juicy Ale. I mean, I don't know. Hazy Ale.
Harendu, there's a reason why people like you and me don't get to pick names of stuff, because I think you're better at it than me. But like, we have brains, but marketing brain is totally different. And it's valuable and it's important, but oh my God, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
JP, you're like the marketing guy here.
I am. That's true. No, it's a terrible name. Terrible name. But, you know, but Hazy IPA does sort of roll off the tongue. I get it. But anyway, the point is, it's sort of a Hazy IPA on steroids, Cooper.
I actually don't think it's 90s style arrogant bastard West Coast IPA. It's somewhere in the middle, kind of. It's not really that far off.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the only IPA I drink on a regular basis is Celebration Ale. So I'm way skewed on anything. To me, that's too bitter. To me, that's too much.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very aggressive for me.
But that's why everyone has their own preferences, right?
That's exactly why, that's why
my wife hates beer in part because she hates any kind of bitterness or like roasted stuff.
Yeah.
She hates coffee for the same reason. At the smallest threshold of bitterness, she's like, I'm out. And everyone's got that threshold that it's different for everybody.
Right. Cooper, let's talk about your beer here, friend.
Okay.
Does this have a name?
I'm calling it Salazy Hazy. So I was brewing S apostrophe lazy hazy. It's a lazy hazy.
Like Silesia from
more
Poland.
Like Slazy.
I thought you were going for like a Polish thing. All right.
I don't know what Sleazy, I was going for.
Slazy hazy.
It was very late at night when I finished brewing this, so I had to name it something, and I just whatever. I was tired.
Hey man.
But yeah, I wanted to brew. So the Mads Armour just had brought back the in club competitions, and I wanted to brew a beer for that. So you know a month and a half or so before that, I made a yeast starter. I'm like, well, of course, if I make a yeast starter, I will be forced to brew this weekend. Then I made it on like a Thursday. I got it going. And
you learned something about yourself then.
And the other thing is the yeast I had around. So I had a London 3 save that I wanted to use to make a hazy. And it didn't look that lively. And then I had a US ale yeast too that was also in the fridge, and they were both kind of past their dates. So I put them in with a proper starter, shake start, and just let it go. And it didn't really do too much. And I was like, well, and then I got to the weekend and I was just too busy to even think about brewing. And then it didn't happen. So I just put it in the fridge. And then like, okay, I'll just brew the next weekend. So I poured off the wort. And I got ready to brew the next weekend. And then I put in another can of proper, another bottle of water, and just shook it up a little bit and got it going again. And then I turned on my Pico Brew, and I hadn't used it in a while, the Pico Brew Z. And I like went to the Pico Brew website, and it was the first time I'd seen the warning, do not enter this site. It's dangerous. You may get, you know, your ass handed to you by somebody that does bad things on the internet. Anyway,
a furry.
So I was like, okay, that's weird. I can't brew with my Pico Z now because it had worked always before. But it's just like, okay. So I was talking to my buddy John later. I didn't brew that weekend. I'm talking to my buddy John later whenever I had a beer at his place. And he's like, and he owns a website. I mean, this is a long story, but
yeah,
whatever. So he's like, I'm like, okay. So I went on my phone. I could just click through, change the security settings a little bit, and nobody's going to steal my Pico Brew password and get my bank accounts. And it's a different password anyway. So,
It's 123456 instead of password, username, password,
everything. Yeah. So whatever. So I went on my phone, like, okay, I can see my brew system. I can see that. So I did, then the next weekend I did the same thing. I poured off the wort, did another starter on the Thursday or whatever. So the starter was like, I probably way over pitched because the starter was getting happy. Like with each successive time, this dead yeast that wouldn't have done much that first weekend was really lively all of a sudden. And I just, you know, it was so a blend. I thought, well, I kind of like the idea of blending the London 3 with the clean American yeast and just maybe get kind of a, you know, slightly cleaner profile, a little bit of that London 3 character too, just for fun.
Yeah.
So I brewed and I got it going. I kind of used what I had around, but this is a 2.5 gallon batch on the Pico Brew Z. I did 3 pounds of American two row pale, 1 pound of flaked oats, 0.5 pound of torrefied wheat. I kind of like the torrefied wheat because all the starches are just exploded and it's unmalted wheat. You can use malted wheat or you can use raw wheat, but you know, this really, I don't know, it's just all those starches get in there and it helps. So I did also, in addition to the 3 pounds of American two row pale, I used just a touch over 4 pounds. I just finished my bag of Simpson's Golden Promise that I had around 4 pounds and an ounce. So yeah, mostly just pale malts and oats and wheat and whatever percentages those are. And I used 0.5 pound of rice hulls with that to help kind of keep it from sticking and getting, you know, and then water wise, I just used, I used like 2.5 gallons of distilled water. And then I used the balance of water. I think it was like a little over 3.67 gallons of water total. So 2.5 of that was distilled water. Then I added 5 grams of calcium chloride. I did not add any gypsum or anything. I'm sure I get plenty of sulfates from my filtered water from the fridge. It was just kind of a lazy way to do it. Usually I'll filter the water or buy spring water, but I just didn't want to do that. I just did it easy and, you know, didn't get any big chloramine problem from that. So that's good. There was not that much house water in there. So, that's fine. It was a short boil too. I just did it was a 15 minute boil and that, so at 10 minutes, an ounce of mosaic, at 5 minutes, an ounce of mosaic, and at 2 minutes, an ounce of galaxy. And then I did a whirlpool where I added another ounce of galaxy. And with the Pico Brew, it runs through all the hops that are in there at that point. It starts with the first, goes to the second, like all those are in the kettle, goes to the third, then goes to the fourth. So all those 4 ounces of hops in a 2.5 gallon batch were whirlpooled for 30 minutes at, I believe it was 175. Yeah, 175 for 30 minutes. And by the time I got to cleaning my system and getting it all working, it was like very late in the day when I started the batch. And I fell asleep and it went and my wife woke me up. Something's beeping and, you know, like 2 in the morning or whatever. I came out and finished the batch and probably, you know,
fell asleep. Yep.
3 in the morning. Yeah, no, I was asleep with my kid. Like, you know, I took him to bed. He pulls me into sleep all the time. It's what happens. But, so she woke me up in his room. Oh, hey, something's beeping out there. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to finish that. So I was up pretty late, you know, got it and, finished it up. And then, so I think that my critical mistake that where I'm meeting some of that bitterness is for some reason in the Pico Brew, and I cleaned everything before I used it, but in the back, and I think it was just because I had so much hop matter in there. Mm-hmm. I ended up with a lot of wort that was in the hop cages there. And at 2 in the morning, my dumb brain is just like, well, I don't want to waste that. So I dumped it into a sanitized pitcher and dumped it into the fermenter along with the rest of the wort and whatever. It'll make beer.
It's fine, right?
Yeah. And I think I did in this case, I didn't separate out the starter wort. I just dumped everything in from that too. And I figured it would kind of even out. But
do you think that's why it was sort of like a more aggressively bitter? I mean, what do you think of the bitterness? That's sort of like the predominant characteristic.
It's a pretty intense bitterness, but it's not overpowering. I kind of like it that way.
Okay. You seem like that guy that would like
it. It's not the softest. I like the bitterness in it, but I might lighten it up the next time. But yeah, I wanted to just dry hop with a metric ton of mosaic and Australian galaxy. high croissant on this. So, you know, the wort tasted okay. I've had rough luck. This is the first hoppy beer that I've made on the Pico Brew Z that I've been really happy with. So I have trouble getting it hoppy enough with, if you're just brewing an IPA with just beer and the, you know, hops in the hop cages, maxing them out and doing mostly late hops and even whirlpooling. I've never gotten to this point where I've had like really good results. And I feel like this time I got it. And I think that the difference was partially that I just needed to dry hop more. So I used, I'll do a couple ounces Mosaic and Galaxy in it. They're both really good smelling hops I had in my freezer. And I just upped it to 2.5 each. So I did 5 ounces of dry hops in a 2.5 gallon batch. That would be 10 ounces of hops in a 5 gallon batch.
Wow, dude.
And I just, it had so much hop matter in there. It was just green and it was thick layer of green in there. And I went in and a lot of times too, in the Pico batches, you ferment them in the kegs. And I kind of stopped trusting that too, a little bit, with everything that's in the kegs. Yeah, there's hop liquid flowing through them, but I just used a really good sanitized carboy. And also, my friend Keith, who used to be on the show, by the way, and he talked about with beers that are sensitive to oxidation, he thinks that Star San kind of sometimes does have an oxidative effect, which isn't going to be pronounced in most beers. But like if you have, you know, a no rinse sanitizer and you just leave it there, that you could, in a very sensitive beer like this, that's going to turn brown at the hint of a little tiny bit of oxidation. It's, you know, that effect might be enough to make it start to turn a little bit south. I don't know if that's true or not, but I actually rinsed the carboy with clean, distilled water, just out of a distilled water bottle, and just shook it around, dumped it out. That's going to be clean.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's fine. It's, I mean, I think like with any beer, you know, you can put beer on the foam.
Yeah.
But you know, there, yeah, it's also fine to let it sit and drain out a little bit. But if, you know, if you're worried about that, yeah, you can definitely do that.
So I got paranoid about oxidation, and I some people don't even like to dry hop these after high croissant, but I brewed it on the 29th. I dry hopped on the 31st and it was already starting to come down. It was a little past high croissant. I brewed this beer in 9 days from the fermenter to the keg. It was done, and it started at 10:57, finished at 10:12. It's about a 6%, maybe 5.9.
That's why they're so popular with brewers.
It's on the light side for hazy IPA.
It's not an IPA. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah. These days, yeah, you need to get 6-8, but I kind of like that it's light, and maybe that's part of what's accenting the haziness, or the bitterness too. But I got a really good transfer. I was happy with it. I had a brand new auto siphon, and I kind of used a clip at the top of the thing, like the chip clip, to get it where I want it.
Nice.
And hung it in there and got it. And then like just before it starts to do that, then I pull the end out of it. I've got a wand on the end of the tube that comes out, so I can pull it instantly out of the keg that it's going into. So I got a really good transfer. I was happy with that. It didn't start darkening or anything like that.
Well,
filled
good.
A small 2.5 gallon keg. Left behind some wort. Sometimes I get greedy. I'm not going to get greedy this time. Those hops were starting to swarm and get ready to go in there, and they'll always clog up my poppets. I didn't want that. So looked nice and hazy, like gold. Tasted good. Mouthfeel felt right. Tasty hop character, soft. Just a touch of hop burn, but I like that it doesn't have too much of that. I think this recipe's a keeper. I might tweak it a little bit, but any advice, guys?
Yeah. Back down on the bittering hops.
Don't dump in that. Yeah. Well, it was only a 10-minute addition, but yeah, it was an ounce.
Well, you do get some alpha from dry hopping, and others also whirlpool. What happened to the whirlpool? I missed that part where you fell asleep and it was still going at 175 for a long time. Was
no, it's the system will just keep. It was cooling, so it was done whirlpooling, and I set it to cool, and I got the kid to bed.
Okay.
And it just runs and cools, and then it, when it's done, it'll kind of beep at you.
Wasn't any extra time added to that, right? So because you're whirlpooling for longer than that, there's definitely alpha extraction there. And the alpha burn, I don't get that. I mean, again, I know people said bunch of people here said that it's bitter, but I kind of think it's pretty pleasant. I don't think it is that bitter. And even the alpha burn is not there. Like I said, hop burn is pretty minimal. I've seen fresh IPAs that have much higher level of alpha burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean, right? Like, Harinder, you're obviously way more exposed to these. You probably go out and order an IPA off the board, right? I don't do that. So for me, it's like, that's a lot. But you know what I was thinking? Like, I wonder if it is sort of more pronounced because, yes, the system recirculates. But, Brian, you said you had a bunch sitting in your hop baskets. So I wonder if those were just sitting there in contact with the hops for...
That was sitting there in contact with
God knows
hops,
how long.
And that was after... So at what temperature? No, it was a low temperature by then. But you're right. That was in contact with the hops. And that's, again, where I think Mike may be critical flaw, but it made decent beer anyway, was... the other thing I'll say is my bottling method leaves a bit to be desired. And I did, just the bottle wand into the bottles from the keg with a stopper and just kind of did a kind of a pseudo counter pressure fill, but not really. I purged the bottles, everything that I bottled, I purged and, chilled the bottles and just did that.
You didn't really say anything about that. Like, it's fine. Cooler. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
They said it was a little no hiss when they opened it. That's
I already forgot about that.
No, yeah. And I don't get any oxidation effect right now. Maybe, I don't know, a month from now or 2 months from now, it'll be a different thing. But right
you're,
now,
you're drinking it eight days after kegging. So you want to drink these fresh. And it's, I kegged it on the 7th. We're on the 15th now. So, yeah.
All right. Well, very good, Brian. Is there anything else? Probably not.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess, water wise, I didn't do any calculations on the water, but I had done four and a half grams or so of calcium chloride before in a hazy, and it seemed like the right amount for the water. But that time I just did it with spring water. This time I was listening to some YouTube video guy, whatever, recommended use some distilled water and blend it with spring water, or just use distilled water. He just used distilled water, added a bunch of calcium chloride and a little bit of gypsum, and that's all he did to his water, and he made pretty good hazies, it sounded like. So I was like, well
sure, what's he gonna
do? I haven't had good luck so far trying to make hazies, and like I had one that I was kind of okay, but then it wasn't the best either.
What's he gonna do, make a YouTube video and get on and be like, my beer sucks, so listen to me?
This will be on YouTube eventually, and maybe somebody will learn something from it, but I don't know. Don't dump the dregs of the hop cages in. That's probably a bad idea.
But no, overall, it's a good recipe, Brian. I think you should do it again and give it to someone else. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to drink more of Brian Cooper's beer here on Dr. Homebrew after this. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
All right.
We are here still here with Brian Cooper, who has another beer for us to drink. Brian, what is this? What is this mess you made?
Well, this is I co-brewed with my friend Eric, who's on with us here.
Eric, welcome, dude.
All right, how's it going?
Eric has Eric's a member of my homebrew club, and he helped me to modernize our competition, the Oktoberfest German beers competition. And instead of doing it on crappy spreadsheets, he actually did it in one of those online ones. That was cool.
Okay.
Oktoberfest is a great comp. I love that competition, entering and judging.
We're thinking about bringing it back. I still haven't
bring
registered.
Bring it back.
Woo-hoo, yeah.
Bring it back.
There
please.
You go. All right, what beer are we drinking, Brian?
This is the Consecration Ale clone, and this is the third batch of it that I made. But I'd done 2 5-gallon batches of it before. The first time I brewed it, when my wife tasted it, it was so tasty to her that she actually made me name it after her. So this beer is officially known in my book as Sonia 3.
Okay.
There was a Sonia 2 and a Sonia 1.
Sure.
But there's only one Sonia. Just that's a yeah. Anyway, really.
Yeah. Mm.
But we scaled it up to 20 batches. We brewed it up on Eric's tippy dump more beer system there, and had a lot of fun brewing it and working on it over the years that it took to make it. Mm. It is it started as the first time I brewed it was the more beer sells the version, and Russian River releases their recipe basically. So it is the Russian River Consecration Ale clone beer, the official, but I've done okay. It since we didn't rebuy the thing. I brewed the same basic recipe and used the little chunk of Consecration oak barrel you get in it. But anyway, I shouldn't give too many details before you guys just judge it, but, yeah.
Okay. Very good.
It's the recipe.
All right, let's do it. Harindu, why don't you lead us off here, young man?
He doesn't have the beer.
He doesn't have the beer. Good Lord. How
sorry,
rude.
It's up to you, JP.
Oh, no, it's not up to me. I'm not doing that. Brian Schar.
Oh, yes. So
let's go, buddy.
Brian Cooper, are you in a homebrew? I'm just kidding. So I noticed you entered this as a Category 28C American Wild Ale rather than the Category. I have never known the numbers, and I swear to God, I never will. There's a category number for specific clones of a particular beer. So after I judge this, I'll be curious to chat with you about why you did that when you're trying to clone Consecration. But this is a 28C American Wild Ale. The aroma, I got a high level of complex aroma, lactic, Brett Funk, fruit. It came across like cherry to me. Low wood. Really great. No off aromas. 10 out of 12 for aroma. A beer like this, whether you're trying to clone Consecration or not, should have a big complex aroma, and this one does. Appearance, 3 out of 3. It's cherry red. Maybe this one made me think about cherry wood. Was this the kind of... it's too dark in the room here. It's coming across more brown, but it's more of a cherry red. Very clear. Low head settles quickly, and it's okay for style. Again, 3 out of 3. Flavor. Initially, the flavor is intensely sour and kind of fruity at a medium level, which comes across as kind of a cherry or maybe a red wine grape. Mid-palate, sour still dominates. Malt is there, but at a very low level. It's clearly very well attenuated. The finish is long and balanced towards sour. Gave it a 16. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Low body, low carbonation. Some warming. It's more astringent than creamy, but it's not astringent, if that makes sense. It's the sourness. Overall impression, gave it an 8 for a total of 42, which is excellent. This is a real kind of rip your face off sour beer, like in the mold of like a Cantillon or a Russian River, that's intended to be really sour. The sourness, though, it's not one dimensional. It's interesting because there's clearly lactic, there's clearly Brett Funk. There's more to it than just, someone dumped a bunch of lactic acid in some wort. the sourness is complex and interesting itself. It does dominate the entirety of this beer, though. So to me, I gave it a very high score. For anything to do to maybe change it in the future, maybe blend it with something else. I mean, when you get into sours, you kind of get into blending, and you know, it's hard to figure out when you're over 40 how to make it better when it's already really damn good. But it's real tasty, and I'm going to finish this bottle before I go to bed. Thank you for sharing.
Well, there you go. What did you score it?
42.
42. Wow. Simping
well,
for Cooper.
I know it's Cooper, and you know he's a good guy. He's a friend. And,
I'll turn off my camera if my image on the screen is too intimidating.
Even if it weren't Cooper, I'd give this a 42. I like this a lot.
Thank you.
I love sour beer. What can I say?
I like it as well. I would like to see it with a little more sweetness to it. For me, it's too acidic, too sour. There needs to be some sweetness balance to it as it sort of winds up in my palate. There's a lot of tan coming through. I also get like a perfumey thing, which I don't really know where that comes from. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, you know, you got that red wine grape going, a little bit of the tan from the oak. You get that's definitely in there as well. You got the color right-ish, you know. I think there's a sweetness level that needs to be in there as well. I give it a 36.
36? Okay. Yeah. We're within 7. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying about I love sour beer. It's maybe a little too sour and blending. And as you're saying, maybe a little bit of sweetening, which probably would involve some blending, would be what I would do to make it be a little better.
Because the sour that I get is almost like a lime juice. Sour.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the
bright tartness. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, like a really bright tartness, but with like a tannic, you know, overtones. Eric, what do you think? Do you have this? You have this with you?
Well, I have what has continued to ferment for another couple of years. So I just put this out of the because we did. I think we ended up with like 16 something gallons. We pulled off 5 gallons each 2 years ago. And they've been in various states of being in refrigerators, that kind of thing. So the one I just pulled off, honestly, after 4+ years, is more acidic. It's a little sherry, you know. I think it's gone beyond kind of where it needs to be at this point. But I did have it recently at the Livermore Beer Fest, and was a little surprised at how well it held up. I am kind of a fan of face punching sours, and you know, I'm a little sad that they're harder to find now that everything's a kettle sour. So,
well, that's true. There used to be a balance between those two things.
Yeah.
You know, used to be able to find, a middle of the road, but now it's like, it's just like what we did with hops. Let's take something cool and see how far we can push it before it becomes undrinkable. You know, right. We did that with alcohol. We did that with hops, and we did that with sours, and everything inevitably sort of ends up pulling back a little bit. But I think with sours, the pendulum swung too far, and you're right. Now all we have is kettle sours, which are easy to do ish, you know, right, on the grand scheme of things, but rarely do they taste the same.
I like that mouth watering in the back of my jaw, you know, that just kind of tightens up for a minute. And then, you know, the big thing for me, and I've introduced a lot of people's sours, is take the second sip. You know, the first one, even if it's a sour that you know and you've had before and you like, it's still a little shocking to the palate. Take the second sip, and all of a sudden you're going to find the fruits and all the other layers of things. And so
I used to always say if you're going to introduce sour beer to people, don't call it a beer, because instantly people, you know, you think a beer, if they've never heard of a sour beer or had a sour beer, they go beer. Well, okay. Like a Budweiser or what, a stout or some shit. And it'll like fry, it'll flip their wig so much. We're like, I don't want this, or they'll spit it out or whatever. But if you go, here's a thing that's a sour drink, don't think of it as a beer. And I think it sort of strips everything, much like the enamel off my teeth with this beer.
Try something interesting.
It sort of strips away any sort of preconceived notions. And you just go, okay, whatever. And I think that maybe can get people to open up as well. Like, okay, let's take another one. And then inevitably, I think you'll like it. I think people will like it. Well, that's interesting. You more sherry-like. That sounds good.
I'm going to hop in real quick. Eric, I thought it was interesting. I got a tiny, tiny hint of acetic, which I didn't write down because it was super, super low. And it's interesting that 2 years later you're getting acetic, because that would make sense, because acetic is like it increases in the presence of oxygen, and 2 years is going to just give it more and more opportunity to have oxygen come in. So I can understand that what you're tasting is probably a little more like Dutchess in terms of acetic.
Yeah, and it's, it was in a big 30-gallon Spiedel fermenter that I was like, okay, well, this thing will be sour forever. And so we put 17 gallons of sour in it, and that was fine, because it fermented there, and then we tossed the cultures in and everything. But then eventually we drained 10 gallons out of it, left 5 gallons in it, draining that 5 gallons out, introduced oxygen that's been sitting in it for a couple of years.
Right.
It might be good.
It's unavoidable, especially in that kind of circumstance.
Yeah. Well, we could put another batch of sour, beer onto it, or beer to be soured onto it, and it would take off happily, I would think.
Sure.
I'm willing to do that. Let's go.
There you go. You guys want
to
give us the recipe?
We're all going to Bottle Taps right now. What's your address?
You guys want to give us the recipe for this?
3020 Brunel Avenue in Pleasanton.
So fermentables, it was a 20 gallon batch. We ended up with, like you said, about, maybe 16 or so gallons of finished beer in the end in the fermenter, but 56 pounds total of fermentables, 2-row base. We had 44 pounds, candied, dark sugar, 4 pounds, corn sugar, 4 pounds, acidulated malt, 2 pounds, Carafa 2, 1 pound, and Special B, 1 pound. Hops wise, there's 10 ounces total in a 20 gallon batch. 8 ounces of that is Sterling, and 2 ounces of Styrian Goldings. The Styrian Goldings is added at 90 minutes, 2 ounces of that, and the Sterling, 4 ounces at 30 minutes, and 4 ounces at 1 minute. It's basically a Belgian dark strong base recipe. The original gravity on this was 1084. And after primary, it fermented down to 1020. I'm really tempted to check the gravity on this again and just see where it's at, because I suspect it's lower than that. It tastes drier than 1020. Yeah,
it tastes a lot drier than 1020.
And it was sweeter in its younger days. But
same,
this one has
bro.
Been
same.
In a keg under carbonation. So it's, it's probably not getting as acetic. I'm not getting a ton of acetic, but interestingly, we entered it in NHC a couple of years ago. And one of the judges got a lot of acetic in it and scored it a little lower, but another judge gave it a 37, who was a well-known judge and home club president around this area.
Harindu, what do you want to say? You want to jump in?
No, I was going to say, like, the one that Eric has, right? I mean, I felt that one was a little lighter in color. And probably is Briar. Look at the color difference between Brian and his. I think it's probably fermented further, and maybe acetobacter, or if it's become more acidic as it has continued to evolve. Same size glass. Yeah. It's still darker, I think, for you.
Yeah, I think so.
It's got a lot of the sour and a good touch of the acetic, but it's not totally unpleasant, but it does certainly have a sherry nose on it that it didn't used to have, or that it didn't have when I had it a few weeks ago at the Livermore Beer Fest, from when it had been in a keg, being under CO2.
Yeast-wise, we added a WLP 530 Abbey Ale yeast from a big starter. I think you got out the 5-liter flask for that one, right? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
won that thing for a couple days.
Yeah, it was a happy yeast starter. So we added 6 pounds of organic dried Zante currants at about 3 months in, and that's when we added the Brettanomyces to it. So Vinny lets it ferment out with the primary, the Belgian yeast, and then he adds the Brett, and then a couple of months later adds the Roselair to get it souring. So I think you want to get that, he wants to get that, the Brett yeast chewing on it, and then add the Roselair to sour it so that yeast has a good chance to give it a little. And I get a kind of a leathery, you know, Brett character out of it. I don't remember if you guys said anything much about Brett, but then so we didn't finish it until, you know, it was like 6 months and then 2 months, and it just sat and it sat and it sat and sat. And I go over to Eric's place and see in his basement, like, oh, how's that doing? Oh, we should finish that and do something with it. Get it, keg it off, and like, yeah, taste it once in a while. I was like, yeah, it's almost ready. I think
there might have been a couple nights where we had some, we were drinking some sours and threw a little dregs in there too.
Yeah.
I know there was a little love child dregs going on in there.
Yeah. It's not going to hurt it. So then a couple years later, we decided to enter an NHC. So it was brewed in 2017, March 5th, 2017. We didn't keg it until early 2019, probably around the same time of the year. And Eric has some really good bottles of wine down there in his wine cellar. And you picked a good bottle of cab to put the oak chunks in. I think we still had the little original chunk of the one from Russian River, but it's not going to do much at that point. I've been through two batches in my system here. So.
Right. Yeah.
But
it's just there for
effect, you know? Yeah. Right. Some new oak and
nostalgia.
Yeah. Right. And a good red wine. And we kind of blend it until we were happy with it, with the red wine and the oak chunks, and got that in there for a while.
Cool.
Probably 7 days or something on the oak, I would think. But I don't know. Yeah. And I think we had strings on it. Was it spirals? And we pulled the oak out of there. I'm trying to remember what
they were, the kind of the flat,
the stage kind of, yeah, the flat ones. Yeah. So we put those in there on strings and pulled it out when we were done. I felt like it was good. I entered it in NHC. And again, it scored like mid 30s then, but I think it was young then. I think it's gotten better over time. And thank you for the generous score, Brian, and the reasonable score, JP.
I'm always scoring a little high, but you know what? I'd have scored that if I didn't know you.
Taste a beer like this, and I know how hard it is to make, it is, you know, more beers, most advanced kit, of course. And this is our most advanced kit. Like it really is a challenge to make this beer. And I was happy with the way it came out, and it was fun brewing this with Eric, and we learned something every time we brew together on his system. And
well, there you go. That's the point. We're going to take a quick break. Hang on a sec. We'll be right back. This is Dr.
All right.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We're wrapping things up here with Brian Cooper. He sent us in two beers. He gave us two beers. How do we, for me, a guy who's never brewed a sour beer intentionally, I want to see more sweetness, more body in this. How would Brian Cooper brew this for me? How would he, if he wanted to add more body to this, how would he do that?
Well, drink it younger or maybe brew it stronger, but it's already like a 9% beer. It's, you know, it's up there.
There's got to be a way.
The tough part about making this stronger is that if it were a normal beer, you'd say something like, oh, yeah, you add more fermentables. Like you go the pastry stout route where there's so much sugar that it can't possibly ferment out. You know, you'd say something like maybe you'd add some maltodextrin, some long chain unfermentable sugars. That's the better answer. Mm. You know, add like maybe a pound of something that's not fermentable. But for sour beers, the sour bacteria will eat all of that. In fact, they prefer the longer chain starches and sugars.
So yeah, wood sugars.
There's nothing. That's why there's not really a sour beer out there with a full body. There's nothing you can put in there that bacteria is not going to chew up and convert to alcohol.
I don't know. I disagree with your first assertion.
Milkshakes and all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, but again, that's I think part of that, like with pastry stout, is you just overload. You put so much sugar in, the yeast eats all they can, and the alcohol gets to a toxic level and they die.
Yeah. Right.
And that's partly why I don't like my pastry stout's good for like an ounce. I'll sip on an ounce of that and like, yeah, that's I'm good. I don't need more. No, I'm fine.
Yeah,
no,
absolutely. No, well, I mean, you know, I think there are plenty of sour beers out there that have more sweetness to it eventually. And I think that there is a way, maybe blending. I don't know, but over time, well, you're right. I think all the bugs in there are just going to eat whatever's in there. So over time, it's sort of moot anyways. But
it's weird to say traditional Belgian beers do this, but traditional Belgian beers can back sweeten with saccharin.
Mm.
And that shit sounds modern, but it's been around forever. And you know, people that back even you know World War II era, I mean, you'd back sweeten with saccharin because it was like something that would sweeten it that the bacteria couldn't eat.
Mm. Interesting.
Or wouldn't eat. Whatever I'm not a biochemist, but I do know that like they'll eat back the sour bacteria will eat natural sugars, natural starches. They love that shit. Saccharin, whatever it is, it's you know man-made. And whatever its molecular structure is not something that those bacteria will target and eat.
Interesting.
We should probably listen to them, not eat it either.
Cooper, what are you doing there, dude?
I'm putting it in a hydrometer, some of the beer that I'm...
What's the reading?
It's got carbonation in it. Surprisingly, it is still up towards 10-20. It's...
Wow!
And I've heard Vinny won't bottle it unless it's down to 10.08 or lower. Yeah, and he won't bottle it.
Got to affect it though.
Yeah, and he puts a wine yeast in the bottles to ferment in the bottle, but it's still around 10.20.
Crazy.
Well, you know, what's interesting is this kind of confirms something that Jamil has said multiple times on Brew Strong, which is that your palate can't detect the final gravity. And it, something can taste really dry and like this and be 10.20 like you just measured, and something could be like a 10.05 or 10.02 and might taste like it needs more fermentation.
Yeah.
And that your tongue is your palate's pretty sensitive and it's a pretty good indicator, but it's not 100% right all the time.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
unless it's spitting facts, you know what I mean?
Oh hell yeah, yeah. Bro.
There's definitely some sugars in there still, so
are we done?
I don't know.
I think we're good. I think we're done. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Cool. Yeah,
Brian,
Eric, thanks for joining
beers,
us, man. I appreciate
it. That was really
cool. It was fun. Next time, we should get some of JP's beers on.
Yeah, mine, I got too lazy. I was like, I don't have anything to put it in. I sort of just didn't. I sort of spoke out of turn when I said, I'll share my beer, but my beer's not. I know what I did wrong. I beat it to hell, and it's not very good. But I definitely will brew something soon. And Shar, you should brew something too. Eric, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate it. And Harindu, thank you very much, man.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it as well.
Nice seeing you, Harindu. Thanks for coming on the show.
And if you want to be on the show,
thanks for having me.
You can email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com, and he will get you on the show. He send us a beer, a mead, a wine, a cider. Kombucha, sauerkraut, well, I don't know, man, whatever, fucking hot sauce, ferment something, and we'll, you know, we'll judge it here, and like we did with Bill's ciders, we will get the appropriate judge to come on, even if we don't know anything about it, so there you go. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, and until next time, we'll see you later.